Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? It's the show where you control what's on the agenda. Ask us anything and we're broad bound to answer. Starring Rick Nash, Corporate King, and the Queen of Irish Wrestling, Lady Hardy. It's Ask Low Blows.
Bravo!
Hello?
Hi.
Yeah, I don't know. I just never think of the intro. You know what I mean? I think of the questions. I always have like answers ready for the questions and stuff, and I'm like, yeah. And I always forget that every single show, no matter what, no matter who shows up, who asks any question, there will always be an intro. And I never think, oh, perhaps I should have something prepared for that, something planned for that. So it's me today. It's Rick Nash today. There is no Katie Harvey. I told her to just stop. She's annoying me. So I just said, right, 1 week. It is 1 week without you being here, please. And thankfully she said yeah.
Yeah, like that. I didn't expect that they're blind so easily. Like I thought then you were being a bit rude, but she went for it.
So she's not here this week. It's just us. I don't know. How was your week, Rick?
Yeah, I'm having a really good week. It's Premier League football's back, NFL is back, NBA, it's getting to the business end of the season, the NBA Conference Finals are starting, they've already started as of last night, the G1 Climax is starting on Saturday. It's like all of my interests, because coronavirus like put everything off, all of my interests have now coalesced into one, so I'm having a really good week. But before we get kind of started on the questions, and before we get started on the silly stuff, which we will have some, I know it is a lads episode of the show. thanks for pointing out Jimmy and Keith in the chat. But before we get started, there is something that I do want to discuss and think needs to be discussed up top. And it's something that like I've kind of thought about, and people who know me behind the scenes will know that it's something that I've wanted to I've just felt like I couldn't not say something about this, and it started to feel like as time went on that not saying anything was kind of covering up, and so I'm going to get right into it and just not beat around the bush. And before I do, I want to clarify that when I get into all of this and kind of bring this up, I speak only for myself. I don't speak for Keen. I don't speak for Katie. I don't speak on behalf of Fight Factory or as the GM or anything like that. This is literally a personal opinion. It doesn't even represent anyone else at Low Blows or anything like that. This is Rick's opinion. That is all. That is all it counts for. And I don't want anyone to be tarred under the same brush for me saying this. But like I said, I just felt like it's one of these things where if I didn't say anything, I'd feel like I was being a part of it. And like, I've been having these rants privately for the past few weeks that now it's just, I think finally something needs to be said, because we all know that we've had this fantastic run the past few years in Irish wrestling. And it's been great. It's been something that we never dreamed we could get. Like, Ireland was one of the best places in the world for professional wrestling to happen. And the fans were getting credit for it. And we got some awesome feuds that got the world hogging and this and that and the other. But I think the one thing that we need to start, in my opinion, moving forward and moving towards accepting is that the heights of it need to go with what we're learning and what's coming out every day, because there was more, and I'll be specific, I'm talking about OTT here, and because this week there's more kind of outrage about OTT, and I don't want to get into the specifics of it, because again, we're talking about like personal situations that people didn't they don't want their experience to be fodder for content for a podcast. So I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, and it wouldn't be ethical or indeed legal of me to do so. So I don't want to get into too much of the specifics. But if you follow on Twitter and all, you will have seen that there was a lot of anger and outrage at OTT yesterday. And it is something that I think we need to talk about, because I'm not even going to break any news here. All I want to do is just talk about stuff that we've already known for a long time, for months, for years. And I think the recent past few months have kind of put it all into perspective. And I think now we need to question, like, if we need to ask ourselves the question, if having OTT around is actually the best thing for all the positives that it definitely has brought and does bring to the Irish professional wrestling scene. The company, I'm going to get right into it. The company's ran by someone who voted no. And again, like, I'm all for people having their opinion and being able to vote whichever way they want. I wouldn't try. And I'm not even saying the people who voted no are bad people. I'm just saying that having certain opinions will sometimes make you unsuitable to hold certain positions, even if it's not expected at certain times. And to be honest, like, this is someone who voted no in their appeal referendum. And not only that, but campaigned to vote no against women having bodily autonomy. And to date, they've never actually backtracked on this. No matter how much negativity they got about this, they've never actually backtracked on this. We have no actual evidence that they actually see women as equals, capable of making responsible decisions with their bodies today. There's been no kind of backtracking on that. And in light of what we've learned over the past few months, again, it's not saying that they're not entitled to have an opinion and to vote whichever way they want, or that that vote makes them a bad person. That's not what I'm saying. But does it make them qualified to handle, like, this level of responsibility in the world that we now inhabit, which has changed considerably over the past few months? And then you look back to the history of OTT and difficulties that they've had in this situation. We'll start, for example, with the Bram incident. If you don't remember, or if you weren't around at that time, it was when Bram was announced for a show that OTT were hosting in the Tivoli, I believe, at the time. There was a lot of outrage about this. People were up in arms because Bram obviously has had a checkered past where he was charged before with attacking an ex-girlfriend of his. And he's played into that, like, and used that as part of his character. And it's very inflammatory for a lot of people who've experienced certain views, and they couldn't stand to have him on the show. And OTT, facing that controversy, decided to backtrack and have him taken down. So in that respect, that got a lot of praise, because it seemed to be a decision that was being made one way or the other, that, like, when you do that and when that's the decision you're making, what you're saying there is that abusers of women, it's no longer acceptable to have them on our show. So it would figure that that's going to follow on as more shows go on. Except the problem is that it didn't. They've had people on many times since that have done similar incidents, and it's been pointed out to them. And to be honest, it's not even a big deal anymore. It's not even something that they even acknowledge or address. When they have someone in who's beaten women before in their lives, it's just something that, like, to be honest, it's now to the point that it was made a joke of. And if this was a John Oliver show, I'd have a clip of Be Cool and Joe making a joke of this in a promo that they put out at one stage about how Joe was this horrible women-hating person. Because that's the regularity that this happened with. And Joe had to sign off on that promo. Joe obviously was, like, helping with that promo. He's, like, complicit in this. But that's the point that we have. This is the same company that backslapped and congratulated itself under a wave of criticism about its treatment of its women's division when it was seen as just a joke, like shortening matches, having comedy matches with Martina every month and not giving women a serious chance to shine and develop. And then they decided to congratulate themselves for holding OTT defiant, which is like saying, yes, look at us, congratulations, aren't we great? We gave women an equal opportunity. Now, it is a positive thing when women get opportunities that they were previously denied. Don't get me wrong. But that doesn't mean that the person who, like, gave them those opportunities gets to now be the hero of the situation. That is so tone deaf, the way that they congratulated themselves and said, oh, isn't it great what we're doing? OTT is a champion of women's wrestling and this and that, which is the way that they carried themselves. But if you want to speak about tone deaf, this is the same company who opened up their second Defiant show with an NLW championship match, not only featuring a convicted women beater, and this was in the news. This wasn't news to them that came out afterwards and looked unfortunate in hindsight. This was something they knew going in because it was released on Twitter beforehand that this person had been convicted in a previous life or a few years beforehand for beating their girlfriend. They not only had that person in an all-male match on an opening up an all-women show. They not had only had that person on the card in the first match as the first person they saw. They had that person win a championship as the opener of an all-women show. That is how tone-deaf this company is towards these issues. The response, and like, I don't want to come out and say... Like, I don't want to come out and slate OTT. I do understand that they have been positive towards Irish wrestling, and they've taken it heights we've never known. And to be honest, like, I'm willing to... I thought about beforehand, and I'm like, what will the response be? Because they're not used to having... like people come out and blatantly criticize them, especially someone like myself who is involved and knows a lot of people involved in the Irish wrestling scene. They're not used to having this kind of stuff. Well, I've actually experienced what the response is when you criticize OTT, because they probably will come out and say, well, Rick just has a grudge. He just doesn't like us. And yes, you are correct when you say that there was a falling out between myself and OTT when they first began. Let's revisit that, shall we? Let's look back at why that falling out happened. The falling out happened because I actually, if you go back on OTTOnTheMan.com and look back at the early shows, the very first shows, I was actually in the front row for those shows, and I spoke very positively about OTT on the Low Blows podcast at that stage. The problem was that I did say to Joe at the time, I'm going to be honest with my reviews. I'm not just going to plug you and mention you. If I see something that I don't like, I'm going to say it because I want to keep my integrity like that I have with my listeners. So I did. I said stuff that I didn't like that I saw on the show. For example, there was racist chants at the show. Like Ryan Smiles' early gimmick with OTT was for them to chant casually racist chants at him to go along with it, them to think, ah, he's sound, and that made him a babyface wrestler. Let's not forget the Fabulous Nikki's old gimmick, for example. And again, I'm not blaming these performers. They're doing a gimmick that they were told to do. But the Fabulous Nikki's old gimmick used to be, I'm a gay wrestler. And this is a gimmick that like has like it's an ancient gimmick in the world of wrestling, but it was dated even at the time. Fabulous Nikki's gimmick was, I'm a gay wrestler and I'm going to do gay stuff to you, to the point that the fans chant for Fabulous Nikki was, Nikki's going to rape you, Nikki's going to rape you. Speaking of rape, okay, one other thing that I criticized OTT for was they had a stand-up comedian before the show do an entire set where the premise of the set, the entire joke of the set, of the pre-show set, was about raping the person who was soon to be known as Session Martina. They made a whole bit out of that. It went about 10-15 minutes. It was all about rape, and it was like, you can't do these things anymore. The time has passed. OTT didn't react well to criticism, so... I was the first person they attempted to have blacklisted from the world of professional wrestling, but not the last. We'll get to that as we go. Because OTT have a history of trying to take out their fans. Like, here's the thing, if you criticize OTT, if you're part of a mob, they back down and do the exact thing they say, whether they believe in it or not. They do the exact thing that you tell them to do and say that they take the issues very, very seriously. But if you're not, if you're on your own and you make a criticism of you, they come for you. For example, the disabled fan. Do you remember there was a venue in OTT held a show, and a disabled fan raised what was quite a fair, in my opinion, query. It was, you have the wrestlers sit in the disabled access section to watch the show. I'm not getting a good view of the show, and that section is for disabled fans. Why? Fair question, right? That person was blocked from social media by OTT. You had another example where the owner of OTT spoke to another person who criticized the company and said to the point, something to the equivalent of, I'm sorry you're so miserable in your life. And then I know, because I checked the likes, his little gang of lick arses who go along with everything that he says went on and liked that status of him picking on a fan. This is the people that are in charge of Irish wrestling right now. These are the power brokers. Time and again, they correct things that go wrong, but the reality is, until the backlash, they're happy enough to let them go wrong to begin with and profit as much as they can in the meantime, until they're absolutely forced to deal with it because of public backlash like this. For example, does anyone want to talk about why Justy was let go from OTT? Let's not forget, what did Justy do? Justy spoke out about get your tits out. Remember that thing? Remember that was a chant that everyone was unhappy with, but OTT never addressed it until Justy did, and then they sacked Justy for addressing addressing it in public. This is all publicly acknowledged, by the way. This is all, like, I think Joe spoke about this on an OTT podcast before. So it's not even a secret. I'm not revealing anything untoward here, but this is the reality of what's going on. Instead of, like, dealing with the situation, instead of seeing something is wrong, what they did was they sacked the person that spoke up about it. And here's the thing. We accept it. I say we. I'm including myself in that. Because we want great wrestling in Ireland with big A-class names inside a stadium. I get it. I've forgiven them too. I've hoped for a better day. I've looked past it and gotten used to it. But the reality is now when we're in a pandemic and we can't be distracted by an amazing Sean Ryan video or a funny Angel Cruz or Be Cool video or the Woke Queens doing some hilarious shit, when that can't distract us from the issues that are going on, we're left with the gruesome reality of the fact that these are the people who are in charge of Irish wrestling right now. These are the people running the show and calling the shots. And we're left with that uneasy feeling that boiled over on Twitter just yesterday. As Keane pointed out before, and he wasn't even criticizing OTT, by the way, so I'm not even dragging him into this, but he did make a valid point before when we were asked the fantasy booking question just a few weeks ago. If OTT were to run a show tomorrow, there is just one reigning OTT champion who could defend their championship if a show ran tomorrow with what's happened between speaking out and COVID. That says something. People applauded their quickness to response to David Starr and that whole incident. And again, it was one of those things where it's like, okay, this could be a watershed moment. This could be a learning moment for this company that has got it wrong so many times. And I remember talking to friends. I remember actually, like, that the morning afterwards, I remember having a discussion with friends who are in the group chat and might back this up. I won't name you if you want to, but are able to back this up, where I predicted what their response was. I'm like, so they're going to come out, they're going to strip them of the belt, but they're not going to acknowledge the issues because they don't want to actually get involved in the issues, because that reveals they might say something wrong when it comes to that, because they've had a sketchy past on issues like this before. And then as we were having this conversation, it literally happened. That was the point. That's how we learned that David Starr had been stripped of the OTT championship, because it's like they literally just did the thing you said they'd do. Because they are predictable when you actually take away the sentiment, take away us wanting it to be good, because we want opportunities for great wrestlers in Ireland to shine. And that's when you look at it emotionless. Another example, the press release. This got me, and this was something that I came very, very close to having this rant about. That fucking press release, okay? For me, I looked at it initially and I thought it was a pandering load of waffle with no actual answers, just airy, fairy promises and Anne. And I've no problem with Anne. I don't know Anne. I don't know that person. But, like, literally, OTT's response to speaking out, which is a big thing, which asked a lot of questions of a company that had to strip half of their fucking champions because of accusations that were leveled against them. They had to provide a lot of answers. What was their answer? They just said, we're going to bring in Anne. Anne is going to be the new person who handles all the rape stuff. That's Anne. Anne is experienced in these kind of things. And, like, I fucking laughed. Because, again, I've no dealings with this Anne. I don't know this person. I don't wish to drag her name through the mud. I'm not even saying anything about her or her qualifications to do it. It was just how tone deaf the reaction was. Because essentially what they were saying is, we're going to name a woman's name. A woman. So, therefore, you can't say that we're doing anything wrong and we're not handling these women's issue. You can't spell woman without Anne. It was literally, I was baffled at how that was their only response. Meanwhile, I had to read this press release. I had to read all of it about how seriously they were taking these issues. Well, one of their then reigning champions and prodigies who'd been accused, part of which the abuse, the OTT owner himself had been named as witnessing before continuing to push this wrestler, I had to read all about how seriously they took these allegations while this person stared at me on their website. This person was right there. I had to look at his face while I was reading these accusations about how seriously they took it, and they just didn't think that they might say, maybe we should take him off our promotional material. I get it, guys. We want wrestling in a stadium. We want to see young wrestlers we like do well. We try and look the other way, but we will continue to be let down because of this simple reason. They don't want to change. They don't believe what they're saying. If they wanted to change and if they believed what they said, then when they made the decision that we don't want to book abusers, they would have stopped booking abusers. And when it was pointed out to them, even if they'd done so by mistake, when it was pointed out to them, they would have made the same decision over and over again instead of just saying, yeah, fuck it, it's not that bad. We'll just continue to book abusers on the show until speaking out happened and they got caught up again. This is the reality. I don't think, in my opinion, and I think their voting history and their campaigning history has backed it up on this, I don't think they necessarily have looked like people who see women as equals. I don't think if the way they booked them in the past wasn't clear enough, or if they're backslapping and congratulating themselves for just giving women equal opportunity wasn't enough, then maybe the fact that they used their platform to encourage others to vote against women having equal rights over their own fucking bodies might be enough. You're asking this person to change. They're not going to. We have years of evidence to say that what they'll do is exactly what they're doing now. They'll say they take it seriously, and then they'll do whatever the fuck anyway, and just wait until people miss wrestling enough that they can be summoned with a Sean Ryan video or with something cool or a timely OTT, OTT chant. The past few years were great. But the reality is, and I was talking to someone yesterday while all this was going on, and the phrase House of Cards came up. And that's unfortunately what I think it was. It's now falling over. Let it fall. Propping this up just because we don't want to let go of the good times just makes all of us who do so worse as people. Let's rebuild. Let's start from scratch and evolve. The good wrestlers and the good people will be fine. They always are. Look back at the last time wrestling in Ireland died on its arse. Who started training? The likes of Be Cool, Sammy D, Michael May, LJ Cleary. You know what? They ended up just fine. You will not harm the careers of wrestlers. If they're destined to be successful, they will still be successful. We're not ruining their lives. They'll be fine. Let's do what we've done in Irish wrestling before and learn from the boom, then do it a better way, minus the bad people. Let's rebuild and let's get back to the stadium. Let's get back to the boom. Let's get back to the heights. But this time, let's do it the right way, even if it takes years. Anyway, sorry. That was my rant. I've been Rick Nash. That's been my TED Talk.
Yeah, I don't really know how to sort of follow that.
We can just get to the questions if you want.
All right, cool. At Kento CCFC, mad change in tone, a sudden very. I don't know.
It's okay. We'll just get to the questions. There's no way for us to segue from one to the other. So let's just acknowledge that we can't, and let's just go to the next place.
Fair enough. Right, Kendall CCSC says he may have been hungry when he tweeted this, but it's another one. Keep one, remove one. You know the usual. Big Mac or Whopper?
Remove one. I don't like either of them.
Ah, fuck. You see, I was hoping you'd answer this because I don't eat burgers.
Nah, I like Big Mac. It's more...
I prefer McDonald's as a chain, you know what I mean? If that's literally all this is coming down to, I'll go with Big Mac just to rep McDonald's, I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I'll go for that.
Cool. This one I do have an opinion on, right? KFC or Nando's?
If I was going for a meal today, I'd go for KFC before I go for Nando's. But I probably, if I had to pick which I like more, I'd probably go for Nando's. So it's tough. Remove one, I'm going to go for quantity over quality, KFC. It's an easier one. I'll go for more. I'll eat KFC more in my lifetime.
So you're keeping KFC?
Keeping KFC.
I am also keeping KFC, right? I had Nando's once, ever. One time, ever. And I was buzzing going in. I was like, I've heard so much about this place. This is like years after it's been established, like here, you know what I mean? And it's pretty late on that my first Nando's, but it's apparently, it's a chicken place. And chicken's one of the only things I eat. So I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. It wasn't. It was grand at best. It was all right at best. And it was nowhere near as good as McDonald's or KFC would be. The only problem with KFC is that its menu is very intimidating. You know what I mean? Mm. I don't know whether to...
KFC is intimidating.
Like, no, the menu. It's always like a big daddy, sexy chicken fucking menu. You know what I mean? There's no like chicken hooks and chips. It's too complicated. You know what I mean? There's too much. I don't know what to order when I go into KFC. So I end up just getting popcorn and chicken. But their large popcorn chicken isn't enough. You know what I mean? I want more.
But, popcorn chicken is just an accoutrement. It's just a side.
But I want my entire meal to be that. You know what I mean? You know, like,
just get 6 boxes of popcorn chicken and just eat it all day. But it won't fill you. That's the thing. It's not a filling food.
Yeah, that's true. But still, KFC or Hernando's anyway is my point, 100%.
Fair.
Deals or Euro Giant? Oh, you're asking me this? I'll ask you, Rick, first. I'll ask you, Rick, first. All right, because everyone knows the answer to this.
Like, why would you pick Euro Giant? What is the benefit of Euro Giant over Deals? Deals has all the name brands. It's recognizable. There's some handy stuff in there as well. Like, never, ever get electrics from Deals. But, like, if you get, like, a spatula, that is going to be your spatula for life. Like, and it's only $150, and you may as well get it. So if you get something that's, like, durable and stuff and it isn't going to break, Deals for life, because just the amount they have. And also, as well, I think it'd make you happy. And, like, I'd miss something, like, if we're doing the show and you were coming in and you couldn't get Deals onion rings. I don't think I want to live in a world where you're that disappointed and dejected every single week. So I'm gonna go for Deals here.
Deals, right, is, again, it's a cheapo shop, yeah, everything's $150, all that sort of shit, yeah, and yet still they have their own brand onion rings that are fucking top of the range, better than any sort of onion rings crisps you can ever get your hands on. And it's unbelievable. Yeah, Deals, 100%. Like, I leave my house once a week. And do you know what I do on that one day? Well, I go to fucking Deals. I get onion rings. You know what I mean? Like, I go out of my way. Like, who goes out of their way to go to Euro Giants? You know what I mean? I go out of my way to go to Deals. So this is another really easy one for me.
I actually have never met someone who planned to go to Euro Giant. Like, he was like, this is what I'm going to do with my day. I've never met someone who said that. I don't think I've met someone like, can you do a full shop there? Do they have a full shop's worth? I know they're doing Deals, but do they have, like, can you get everything you want enough to
that's
do a shop?
That's a good question. Deals during peak lockdown stayed open because they had enough. They were considered essential because their onion rings are just that good. You know what I mean? I don't know if Euro Giant has that sort of same kind of, that same pull, that same sort of, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know if they stayed open during the absolute peak of it, so...
It's a good point. Is Euro Giant an essential business? It's a very good point, like, yeah, it's definitely one worth discussing. John Nolan asks, how have you not died from malnutrition yet?
Because I'm eating all those onion rings, you know what
chicken,
I mean?
Chicken, protein, it's, chicken nuggets.
Exactly, chicken, selects, nuggets, goujons, whatever you want. Keith Haney also says 80 pieces of popcorn chicken for €8. I think he's talking about the popcorn chicken.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah, I will. If I'm around KFC at any point, I don't like eating in places now, but right, popcorn chicken sort of thing you can take with you when you're going somewhere else, yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, I might actually, that's not a bad idea, Keith. Yeah, that was an easy one, Kento. A 99 or a McFlurry? Interesting one.
McFlurry for me. It's again, just like, a 99 is a great idea, but then, like, it's awkward to eat and it's gone really quickly. And you're like, what happened? You never get to the like enjoyment part of a 99, in my opinion. It's not that I have any beef with 99s. It's generally a pleasurable experience, but you never get to the actual, like, this is what we play for. I never get to that moment with 99. like with a McFlurry, that, you know, it's substantial. It's a substantial meal. I would go into McDonald's if they were charging for substantial meals there, and I get a McFlurry. So, I'm going to go for that. I'm going to go McFlurry.
I feel like if I ate McFlurries, that'd probably be my answer, but I just don't. Like, I haven't had a McFlurry in like over a decade. I was really, really young when I last had a McFlurry. I don't remember the last time I had a McFlurry, because every time I go to McDonald's, I just get, you know, chicken selects and stuff. A 99, I mean, that's the OG ice cream, though. You know what I mean? That's like... I'd respect it too much anyway to get rid of it. You know what I mean?
That being said,
last time I had a 99 was the first time I had a 99 in a long time as well. And it was probably the first time I've had a 99 while having long hair, right? Because I was outside, it was windy, and I've never had this problem before. But my hair was drenched in ice cream. I have never... I don't think that's a McFlurry problem. I don't
think... That
seems to be like a Keen problem. I feel like most long-haired people could still have a 99 and not have that problem. But I just don't have the brain power to really work around it. But I'm not
you
heavy.
Way around the 99.
I do like ice cream. It's just not something I have very often. But I'm gonna go a 99. But you could probably change your mind on that one. Sausages or rashers?
both solid options. I prefer the two of them together. Like, this is it. Like, I'd love if I could, like, swap Big Macs or Whoppers for sausages or rashers. Like, if I could do it that way, if I could do it a mathematical way. I'm going to go rashers slightly. I think you grow into rashers. I think when you're younger, for me anyway, I didn't appreciate rashers enough when I was younger. I was all about the sausages. But, like, I grew into them, and I'm like, yeah, no, this is the way I want to live my life. Just the smell, the taste, everything about them. Sausages I like, don't get me wrong. There's, like, when it's pork sausages, there's never actually enough of them. Turkey sausages I'm really into. There's different types. Oh, it's tough. But I think I'm still going to go rashers. I love me some bacon on a Sunday morning.
I don't know. I don't really eat rashers. I like sausages kind of a little bit, a tiny bit, maybe. So, yeah, I'm just going to go with sausages. Smoothie or milkshake?
Milkshake all day. A smoothie is just a posh milkshake. It's just a pretentious milkshake. Like, it's just like, yeah, oh, do you want some olives? No, just give me chocolate, you sap.
Like, yeah, so, oh. I think that's kind of the camp I'm in as well. Like, again, I haven't had either a smoothie. Like, I don't remember last time I've ever had a milkshake. Smoothie, I remember when I was really young, getting a smoothie once, thinking it was going to be deadly, and it was the shittest thing ever. So I am going to, I'm going to go with a milkshake. Spice bag or a 3-in-1?
3-in-1 all day. I'm not into spice bags. I don't like all spicy stuff. Now, I don't like half the stuff in spice bags, where I like all of the three in the 3-in-1. If I'm feeling particularly adventurous, I may go for a 4 or indeed a 5-in-1. I can go there. I would never go for a spice bag, so this is easy.
Sean is going for a 4-in-1 with shredded chicken in it.
Yeah. Sean's got the right idea.
I'm not someone, I never have Chinese again. Like, you've asked, I am not one for the food questions, but a spice bag I have had before. It was all right. I mean, it was spicy chicken. It's one of those things that kind of smells nicer than it actually tastes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, if you're hungry, you think it's going to be unreal. Then you have it, and it's like, it's all right. I'm going to go with a spice bag. Pasta or rice?
Pasta. Like, it's substantial rice. Like, it's just like, it's thicker rice. It's rice that fills you. I like rice, don't get me wrong, but I'd never, like, apart from in a 3-in-1, I'd never cook it for myself. Like, I'd always be like, if I'm going to eat, I'm on one meal a day at the moment as well. So, like, if I'm going to eat, it has to be substantial. It can't just be, like, airy-fairy shit like rice. It has to be something that's going to fill me. Pasta will fill you every single time, so it's pasta easy.
Yeah, I've never actually eaten rice my entire life. pasta, but here's the thing though, like, I know pasta is shit. Like, I have had pasta and it makes me fucking gag. So I'm gonna go with rice. I'm gonna
have it like dry, like your Weetabix.
What?
Do you eat it dry like Weetabix?
Yeah.
you're such a weirdo.
No, I don't actively. I mean, I have eaten dry Weetabix, but it's not something I would go out my way to eat.
But have you eaten pasta dry? Like, that's the point.
Oh, no, it was like, right. No, it had all this pasta shit. It was like proper pasta, but I just didn't like it at all. Oh, it was one of those things, you know, when you're like at a relative's house and making dinner and you have to pretend you eat shit other than chicken nuggets and chips. Yeah, it wasn't a good experience. So I'm gonna take a gamble. I'm going to say rice, even though I could end up hating rice if I was to ever have it, but I probably won't. Steak or burgers?
This is one of the tough ones for me, because, yeah, I love both. It's so tough. Like, I love burgers in so many different ways. Like at Burger King tonight, I love Bunce and Five Guys. I'm so happy living back in the city centre that I get to, like, order these again.
Think of variety as well. There's so much, like, they're versatile, you know what I mean?
The shit you can do, whereas steak is amazing. Don't get me wrong, like, of the food, like, if we're just judging the meat in particular, like, if I could have steak burgers, then I consider this. Then I'd see it as an easy one. The meat in steak is better than the meat in burgers, but, like, yeah, I'm going to go burgers for variety in the amount I'd eat it.
There are chicken burgers that you can get in Dunn's and stuff like that, and he has never specified what type of burger, and these chicken burgers are just like really fat chicken nuggets kind of in a way, so I'm gonna go with that because I do eat them, so yeah. I also eat steak the odd time, but I don't really like it. So yeah, chicken burgers I'm gonna go with.
Ketchup or mayonnaise? Ketchup every day, all day, every day.
Mayonnaise to me doesn't even seem like edible. You know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned, like, I don't use.
Well, it's not like you can't like you can't eat mayonnaise by itself.
Not like. Yeah. Well, I know that, but I mean, like, it doesn't seem like something. You know what I mean? Like, whereas ketchup is like, I don't eat ketchup, but if God forbid I was having a chip and it made its way through some ketchup or something by accident, I could still eat it if I had to. I wouldn't want to, but if I had to. Whereas like if it went through like mayonnaise, it's gone. You know what I mean? It's dropped. It's out of the squad. You know, so I'm going with
what do you not like? Do you eat ketchup dry as well, or do you eat chips dry as well?
Yeah.
What are you eating everything dry?
Just salt. Yeah, that's it.
Would you?
When I have chipper, there'd be vinegar in it as well. But that's it.
Would you bleed and lubricate your food for fuck's sake? Like,
no, I have everything plain. Like, literally, and I always in McDonald's, they always look me mad weird because I'm always just like, oh, they're always like, oh, what sauce do you want? And I'm just like, oh, no sauce, thanks. And I just look at me like, are you fucking dumb, you little fucking stupid cunt? Why are you coming in here asking for fucking food with no fucking sauce, you dumb fucking? It's like, all right, fine. They don't say these things, but I can see it in their eyes. You know what I mean? You can see behind their words. They're not happy with me. And it's like, I'm sorry, man. I just don't like this sort of stuff. Anyway, we are now on to the final one. Onions or peppers?
Hate both of them. Get rid of both of them.
Yeah. No, but you see, you can't. You have to keep one. That's the rule. So
there's an option for me to die. So no, I'm going to take that one.
No, there is no option.
There's always
an option. You have to pick onions. No, there isn't. That's a cop-out. Onions or peppers? I will give you an answer if you're struggling, right? There are cheese and onion crisps, and they're lovely. There are no cheese and pepper crisps.
So the pepper.
Sound shit. Don't want it. No, I'm going to go with my cheese onion crisps. I'm going to go onions for that reason alone. I'm with you on onions and peppers. Wank. Don't like them. But yeah, we'll save onions.
I like the logic. I'm going to sign off on that. But you've just made me think of pepper sauce and get confused. But I suppose I'm getting rid of steak anyway, so it's no excuse for eating pepper sauce. So yeah, I'm happy to sign off. Onions. Go for it.
Thank you for the question, Kento. Again, I think that was record time. I think we bombed through that, mainly because I don't eat anything.
Love it.
Linda at @midget_mummy, if you were on death row and had one last meal, start or main dessert? So another food one, but this is more one that I can answer, right? But Rick, first of all, what is your meal on death row?
Domino's. Dessert to be romantic. And then starter would be... I was gonna say chicken wings, but I don't know where. I think I'd get the TGI's used to do a sharer starter. I think I'd get that again. I haven't had that in years, but it was amazing. Where they'd have like breaded potato, jack of potatoes, and then mozzarella sticks, and I think they had a couple of chicken wings in there. So I'm gonna get that, and then Domino's, and then a bit of Romantica for dessert.
Fair enough. Right, I start things off with a big fuck off bowl of cookie crisp. I think that'd be a nice starter. It's again, see, I'm using the starter. These things don't mix at all together, but I'm using my starter, main, and dessert to like just give me one last bit of everything that I love. I love cereal. Actually, that's the one thing that I eat quite a lot of. And cookie crisp is arguably my favorite cereal. There's you can debate over it, but I think cookie crisp would be a nice starter. Just, you know, if you're on death row, you want to be cheered up a bit.
Yeah, because you're like who's going to judge me at this stage? Like, so what if I want to have cereal for my starter? Like, I this is what I want. I'm going to die in a few minutes. So, like, yeah, no, that's fair.
The main, yeah. That's, okay, yeah, the Domino's, you made me think, but I'm going to stick with a large 5-piece chicken select meal out of McDonald's with no sauce and Coke.
Nice.
Oh, apple juice goes with my cereal, by the way. Yeah. No, apple juice goes with my cereal, by the way. I should have mentioned that. Apple juice is way better than orange juice. That's a fence that I am not on at all. Fully in team apple juice. So that's my main course, my starter. My dessert then, that's where the Pringles and cookie come into play. Sour cream onion Pringles, cookie from Lidl on the side. Deals onion rings, obviously, you just miss out, unless I can include them too, but I'd say that's probably being a bit greedy. Really say, yeah, that'd be like me including the Domino's chicken in a main course. I don't think I'm allowed to do that. There's probably limits. Sour cream onion Pringles again. Well, I think apple and pear is the drink I'll go for my dessert. Apple and pear juice, is it Robinson's?
So much apple, like in this. I didn't
it's
expect
lovely.
That.
It's and John the Gaspar is fucking hate apples. The food is rotten. Can't stand apples. Disgusting. But the juice is lovely.
Yet it's, you it's would have it before of... you die, like.
Yeah. It's a weird sort of paradox. See, I remember having an apple once when I was younger, and it was genuinely, it made me sick. I couldn't stand it. And now, like, the thought of eating an apple now would actually make me sick on the spot. So,
but it tastes the exact same as the juice. It's not like ketchup, no, it where it's different. Like ketchup isn't the same as tomatoes. Tomatoes like have a whole texture that makes a completely different experience. But apples and apple juice are pretty much the same. It's no, like a hardened version of like apple juice. That's all it is.
No, the texture as well is disgusting, and it also depends on what apple juice you go for. That like squeezed apple juice is the shit. That is the absolute king, fucking top level apple juice. So. No, it's nothing like actual apples. Keen. Actual apples, apple, I can't even speak, but they're disgusting.
Keen, have you ever tried apple saft from Lidl?
No.
Just treat yourself. Treat yourself.
Trust. I don't trust you at all. So
No. Pinky swear. I swear on anything. This is the go when it comes to apple juices. Like, just trust me. Look, squeeze
Maybe
is still
I have,
there.
But I haven't realized.
Squeeze Absolutely. Is still there. Like, well, you would have had to go in especially for it, like. Do you know what I mean? So, like, you probably haven't done that, and you'd be familiar with it if you had. But, like, treat yourself this weekend. See how you see. Because it's a very... Here's the problem I always had with apple juice, okay? Sometimes you can get it. Now, again, I like apple juice too, but I like strong apple juice. I want to taste the apples. I don't want water with an apple-y flavoring. You know what I mean? I want apple juice. I want juice made of apples.
You see, this is where we're gonna split. This is where we're gonna split. You're gonna go one way, I'm gonna go the other. Because I actually cannot fucking stand when I open up the fridge and there's apple juice, but it's like bought because it was like the realest apple juice, the strongest apple juice, the appliest apple juice of all the apple juices. I'm like, this is fucking sick. And I don't mean the good sick, I mean the bad sick. Well, no, I'm being a bit harsh. I could still drink it, but it's got nothing on like squeeze. I know squeeze isn't even like, again, as you say, it would actually. Squeezed apple juice probably is that. It's just apple flavored fucking water. But it's the nicest. It's the sweetest. It's just the best. And that's why I love it.
So you just like a hint
apples,
of apple.
So. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah,
you
yeah.
just like to flirt with the idea of apples rather than having apples themselves.
Exactly. You get me now. But yeah,
maybe that's his lethal injection. Just straight up fruit from the chat. M&S Pink Lady apple juice. That is all. Okay, another strong apple juice recommendation.
Is there any fruit I like? Bananas are passable at times. At times, I don't eat them.
At times, I like how you make it sound like they're the variable. Like they're like the taste of banana is the variable as opposed to you. It's like at times when the banana is made right, then it is passable.
Yeah, because I mean, some of your bananas are all fucking green. And yeah, no, but it's due with time. Like sometimes they'll be fucking green and disgusting. Like you leave it too late and it'll be brown and disgusting. Yeah. You need to find a sweet spot where it's yellow, but like not too yellow either. You know what I mean? So it's
you
like,
want
it's
just
literally...
the start of the brownness.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that one sweet spot, and that's why I'm not a big fan of bananas. But they're definitely the best fruit. They're the only fruit I could eat if I absolutely had to. Where are we going now? Thank you for the question, Linda.
He banana. Likes bananas. Hold on, we got another chat. He likes bananas when it's shaped like a ring and tastes like onion.
Yeah, pretty much, Jonathan.
Oh, God.
At Dave Bandana, I just so happened to have watched The Next Karate Kid starring Hilary Swank during the weekend. So what I'd like to know is, other than Cobra Kai at the moment, what are your favorite martial arts team movies? These TV series and video games. So quite a selection there you can choose from. Do you have anything in particular?
See, I'm not a huge martial arts guy, but I do love Cobra Kai, and I just want to take a second to espouse my theory. And I'm going to discuss this a bit more, but I just want to throw this out there for now, because I had the pleasure of like catching up with Cobra Kai, and I'm fully caught up now. Don't worry, I won't get into spoilers if you guys are watching it. But like, I want to like... you know, when I look back at like kind of, I've had the pleasure, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought, but I've had the pleasure of having it introduced to me with the caveat of, isn't this so much like wrestling with rival skills and this and that? And that made the show for me because I only saw it through those eyes. And like, who would be who in terms of, it was literally like watching an Ask Low Blows question play out on TV. It's like, who would these people be in Irish wrestling? Except it was written really saliently. So I'm going to discuss this more maybe when they're on the show. But for me, the Irish equivalent of Cobra Kai would be, and I know Justy in particular, we've had it out in the Low Blows WhatsApp about this. He doesn't like this comparison, but I will stand by it to my deathbed. The old Cobra Kai would be NWA Ireland, with Kreese being Paul Tracy, which has been discussed publicly before, how Paul Tracy could be kind of distant from people and stuff like that, and trained people to hate like Irish rip wrestling and like be merciless towards them. And even like we spoke before about like how Phil used to wait on street corners to attack the Irish rip guys and so on. And I'm not saying Irish rip where Miyagi or like that are the good guys. That's not the point I'm making. But it's just the comparisons are there. Whereas when you look at Fight Factory, which kind of came from the ashes of NWA Ireland, and then if you look at Phil as one of Kreese's old lapdogs, who would have been one of his greatest like fighters back in the day, and fought for Cobra Kai, but then grew up and wanted to do things the right way, I think that's a fantastic comparison. I do want to get like Katie and Phil's thoughts on it, but I absolutely love Cobra Kai myself personally. In terms of my favorite martial arts, Kill Bill probably for me would be, and I know that's kind of a basic answer because it's not a proper martial arts answer, but I'm not a huge martial arts guy, so Kill Bill would be it for me. I listened to the soundtrack in the gym for that the other day. I absolutely love those movies, so yeah, that all day.
If we're I have a movie or TV show, technically The Ultimate Fighter is mixed martial arts. It is. It falls into
that
category.
It is, yeah.
I am going to throw The Ultimate Fighter into that TV show bracket. But my actual answer comes in the form of games. So I never played Street Fighter or Tekken or anything like that growing up. But my cousin had a game called Virtua Fighter 4 on PS2.
Nice.
I don't know if any of you have ever played Virtua Fighter. I don't know if this is like a rip-off of these games, because I've never heard anybody talk about Virtua Fighter. I don't know if it's like a stand, if it's like a rip-off game, or if it's just like its own standalone game that just doesn't get any attention. I don't know how good it is compared to the other ones, but that's a game that I played a lot growing up, and then I played Virtua Fighter 5 on the Xbox then as well. Absolutely loved it. So yeah, that is my answer, if any of you have ever heard of Virtua Fighter.
I think I had Virtua Fighter, and the reason I had it, I believe, I can't remember it in depth, because I think it was like a Japanese, I think it was one of the first games that was released on PS2, and as I've spoken about before, I got a PS2 imported from Japan the first Christmas it even came out, so like I only had options of Japanese games, so I think that's one of the games they had. But the reason that I'm sketchy about a lot of the games they have is because they were Japanese, so I didn't understand them. But I'm pretty sure that was one of the first games released on PS2. And it is. No, that's a noted game in itself. I don't think it's a rip-off or anything like that, though I haven't tuned into the narrative around Virtua Fighter with adult eyes, so who knows? Maybe everyone's like, oh, this is a rip-off Tekken. I don't know, to be honest. But I do remember it. I will acknowledge it. It was a good game, as far as I remember.
Yeah, no, I love Virtua Fighter. But yeah, thank you for the question, Dave. At MitchellC94, just started watching Umbrella Academy and thought Robert Sheehan's character reminded me of something. My question to you now is, will you ever be able to get this out of your head now?
And then he sent in a picture. He sent in a picture of the bad guy, I can't remember his name, from The Lion King 2, Simba's Pride, which is like the ultimate, like, to be fair, Disney got good at making sequels when they bought Pixar, basically. Whereas, like, the amount of movies, childhood movies that we loved that have sequels we don't even acknowledge or even have heard of, like they have to have like little taglines, like funny cute taglines like Simba's Pride with double meanings. Yeah, that's that. And I don't think I've seen that movie. If I did, I saw it when I was very young, so sorry Mitchell, I don't have it. But I have some good news for you, Keane. So do you know the way, like, we were selling you on it before, in the Robert Sheehan in Umbrella Academy plays basically his character from Misfits?
Yeah.
That's who it reminds me of. Like, and I watched The Umbrella Academy. I'm watching season 2 right now. It's very good. But I have news that you may not have heard of. I don't know if you have or have access to a Netflix account. But if you do, all of Misfits just went up on Netflix.
Oh, nice.
I know, that's a big, that's one of your shows.
No, but Yeah. I remember. No, I've watched Misfits start to finish. It's a fucking. It actually, I do like it. It's been it's so long actually since I watched the Misfits. Yeah.
It's a really good show to get on Netflix because it's in everyone's head. When you see Robert Sheehan play this character, you can't help but think of Misfits again, even if you hadn't thought of it for years. And yeah, like you say, it's worth a rewatch because even think about it, Ramsay was in that show. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can watch
yeah.
it with whole new eyes now. It's like long enough has passed that I probably won't remember even storylines and stuff when I rewatch it. Do you know what I mean? I remember there was a baby at one stage, I think. I barely remember the storyline too as it was. They were doing community service, am I right? And they had, like, there was a storm and they caught superpowers?
Yeah, there was a storm. They were all outdoors, and anyone who was struck by lightning in that storm that was outdoors got a superpower. It was really good stuff.
Umbrella Academy is, like, in hindsight, Umbrella Academy is, like, a high-budget version of, like, it really is, of Misfits. And the fact that they have Robert Sheehan in it, who's an Irish actor who hadn't done anything major over the past few years, is proof that the makers know, because they're like, we want to get the guy from the show that we're basing this on. So that's what Umbrella Academy reminds you of in a big, big way. But that's not a bad thing. Sean just started watching Misfits for the first time today. Enjoy it. From, like, I think the third season onwards, they change up the cast quite considerably. And you may be out of it by then, or you may enjoy it because it wasn't necessarily a terrible shakeup. But just a heads up.
It was
on
hard.
That.
The only thing I remember was that like it was difficult at first, but then the more episodes you watch with the new cast, it kind of
it clicked.
It was easier to take then. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it took a bit of time, but it got there. That's just what I felt anyway.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. It was better than you think.
Yeah. Thank you for the question, Mitchell. At Brian the Maniac, what is your favorite wrestling championship title of all time? Right, this is one of those ones where I think we'll be on the same page here, right? I'm going to count down from three, three, two, one, go, and we'll both say it, right?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Three, two, one,
Hardcore
go! The Spinner
Championship. No.
What? Wait, what'd you say?
Hardcore Championship.
You're going with the John Cena Spinner title?
No.
The WWE Spinner?
No,
what?
Sorry.
I was the king. That was the king of all titles. That was the coolest title ever. Like, growing up, I was like, that's the title that, like, everyone should want to hold. Like, it spins. People would always be like, oh, it lacks prestige. You know what I mean? Like, the big gold belt is all serious, and this looks like a kid's toy. It did not look like a kid's toy. It looked like a championship for big, strong wrestlers. It was just, it was a masterpiece. And it spun. So, yeah, I was a big fan of the spinner belt.
I like how you clarified that the spinner belt did indeed spin.
John says the US title spinner. That was also a good one. It was,
I like
it was
that.
A bit before my time.
Yeah, I like that rather than the WWE Championship. I'm not a snob like that. I don't care about belts. So this is a tough question for me because I've said this before. I've never been – like, I like the Hardcore Championship just because it's so different and it makes sense. And it's like kind of just making a mockery out of title belts. So I appreciate that. But I'm not big into belts. Like, even when you see, like – wrestling kind of discussions about like, oh, and they have the side plates and this and that. I'm like, it just doesn't engage me at all. But like, I like the US belt better because it was like, yeah, that's totally up for mocking and just making a joke out of it. Whereas I do get where people had an issue with the change of the WWE championship because then everyone had to have a spinner belt. That was my issue with it. Because it was like, why does Chris Jericho or Edge need a spinner title? Now, like, it's like, it only makes sense for Cena, you know?
No, I think they should have, even to this day, we should still have a spinner title. Dan Manning asks, Kian, did you like it when it stopped spinning? No, needs to spin, that's the rule. Sean says, maybe the 2000s WWE Cruiserweight belt.
I can't remember that.
I do remember it was grand. Like, I mean, it's not really, it's a weird favorite to have. My favorite US title was actually the one they just scrapped. I really liked that. I thought that design was great. I was actually a bit upset when I heard they were getting, they're redesigning it. My actual, if we're talking outside WWE, the X Division title.
Ooh,
I don't really,
yes.
Again, I'm not like, if it looks good for a start, in my opinion. I don't really like when mid-card titles don't have a purpose, but it did, it gave TNA an identity at the time. Everyone's favorite TNA memories usually revolve around the X Division. And they did eventually give it a purpose when Option C came in and you could cash it in for a world title shot. I still love that. I thought they still do that. It's been a while since I've seen them do that. But it gives it meaning. And yeah, I like the title. But yeah, you said the Hardcore title.
Yeah, the hardcore belts, the old Crash Holly 24/7, where it just looked like a belt that, like, I think it literally came out of the trash. I think that was the joke, where they took it out of the trash and then just gave it to Mick Foley. Like, and that was a play off the Medusa putting the belt in the trash. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then, like, it looked like a belt that was taken out of the bin, but everyone cared about it so much. And then, like, you got all the happy memories to come with it. Like, it's just, it's something which is never bad for me. Do you know what I mean? I've never had any reasons to think badly of it, and I quite like the idea, and I don't care that much about the concept. So, but I have, Jonathan got on and said, the spinner belt looked like something from Pimp My Ride UK.
Who's a Pimp My Ride UK?
Jonathan said the spinner belt. Jimmy said Miz made sense when he changed the W to M. I actually really did like that, because it was like taking John Cena's gimmick and making it his own. So I did really like that. That's a very good show, actually, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. It's, if we're talking memories, yeah, like a lot of, I actually thought of like all the titles that were active in 2007 in WWE. And yeah, a lot of them are, like, most of them are gone now. I think they're all gone now, actually. But yeah,
you do think of your first championship, like the belts that were the belts when you got into wrestling. You think of them as the real belts.
Yeah.
Because they're like, that's what true. The belt looks like. That's what the world championship belt looks like. Even if you look at it like belts that came before it, which obviously have more of a claim to say that's what the world championship belt looks like, but you go, you're just a rip off of this belt. Or you're just a shit version of this belt. Even though it's beforehand. But yeah, that's very true.
Thank you for the question, Brian. Dan says, Punk's long reign is synonymous with the spinner. Undisputed was always my fave. Fair enough. At Sean McSaurin, who are the members of Retribution and why are they Dominic Mysterio, Dom Tuck, and the four members of the Spirit Squad that aren't Kenny Dykstra? Apparently my mom is in Retribution, as I learned a few days ago. Did you watch Raw this week?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Did you see the Retribution segment? Because one thing I noticed from the Retribution segment, I'll get to it later, but the part where they, the earlier part of the show where they just, they were on the screen doing the interview.
They're breeding.
No, what I noticed was how it wasn't even like subtle who they were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mercedes Martinez's eyes. That's not like even remote. That's not me speculating. Like, those are her eyes. Like, she was just on NXT like last week. Like Mia Yim is right there. That's Mia Yim. Like, how, that's Dominic. Like, that's, they're not even like hidden. You know what I mean? Like, that's
Dio Madden is in it.
Dio Madden. Now, I'm not overly familiar with Dio Madden, so that's fair enough. Shane Thorne, I think, was there as well. I look back at it. I'm like, yeah, that is Shane Thorne. It's like,
oh, man. Not,
and the guys, like, they could still change when it's actually their time to debut. And that's
wrestling. Like, it's like, not like, just because we see it's them doesn't mean that it's them. Like, it could just be Eric Rowan. Like, Eric Rowan is all of Retribution. Like, he's every member. Like,
there's,
that's
big red. It's like the Dudleys. There's big red. There's medium red. Little red. Smaller red. Like, you know. Average size. It's just all bald lads. It's like the imposter who killed Roman Reigns last year. He's in it, and then like all the other like Eric Rowan lookalikes they can get their hands on. That'd be deadly, actually. Oh man, I should be in charge.
They have to, like, but surely like the Retribution part of it and the promos have to make sense. Like, why would Mia Yim or Mercedes Martinez want Retribution against WWE? Like, the point of Retribution is like to get people thinking, is this the sacked wrestlers coming back? Like, kind of the storyline they did with Drake Maverick inverted. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is the people who got sacked, but they, now they're pissed and they're getting Retribution back at WWE. That's what they're hinting at. So if it's just people that are employed and like have nothing really to be angry about with WWE. Like, Mia Yim, what's she pissed off about? She's getting used quite well in NXT. Her husband, who's on screen as well, like, it's acknowledged he's her husband. He was in a title match this week.
And he used to talk them.
Yeah, wait, yeah.
No, like, Shane Thorne, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, maybe, sort of, kind of, he's not being used, whatever. The rest of them, like, these are doing all right. I mean, Dio Madden, maybe you got a point, but the rest
of them are doing all right. And he wasn't even a very good wrestler.
Well, he wouldn't think that, you know what I mean? So it's like, all right, I get that. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Fuck it. We'll talk about it later, because there is a question where Retribution are relevant again. But yeah, why are they the six members? I don't know, Sean. That's just the way things are.
I also look, if you want to know the real answer, go watch Corporate Keane's video on YouTube this week. If you haven't seen it already or you're not subscribing for whatever reason at this stage, the link is up on the Loblaws Twitter. Do check it out. It's very funny. It's a journey. It's like four different videos in one, and I'm all about it. I loved it. I would just change it to a different video every couple of minutes, and I was like, yeah, this is just an adventure, and I'm all in.
Thank you for the plug. And thanks for the question, Sean. At Clueless Nerd, Adam asks, with kayfabe being dead for years, don't know about that. When was the last time? Oh, well, this is the question. When was the last time a storyline got you hooked to the point you forgot it was? For me, it was Money in the Bank 2011. I was so invested in the story, I thought CM Punk wasn't coming back at all after winning the title. And Adam, my answer is, last night, I watched Monday Night Raw, and I fucking shit you not, I absolutely fucking loved it. When the Hurt Business came out to confront Retribution, I was fucking screaming. I was fucking screaming. And that's without a crowd as well. You know what I mean? Imagine the reaction that would have got. It pains me to think, because obviously it would have been unreal. Like, I adore, I said this before, weeks ago, I fucking adore the Hurt Business. I love MVP. I think he brings so much to the table. Cedric Alexander is a fucking excellent addition, because he's unreal in the ring. He's shit at talking. Now they have somebody doing talking for him. And, it's just so good. They're so fucking cool. And it's also, it's like a 2020 evolution. You know what I mean? You've got the veterans in MVP and Shelton Benjamin. You've got the sort of the presence still in Lashley, even though he's been around a while. He still has it. He's still a big present day monster. And then you've got Cedric Alexander, the future. And I think this is going to do nothing but great things for Cedric Alexander. And honestly, it's so good. It's so good. And like, man, I'm so invested. I hope. And like, what's this going to lead to? Is this going to lead to like Survivor Series? That's only, I think, 2 months away. I don't really know what month it is. I think it's 2 months away. Are we going to get a Survivor Series, you know, Team Retribution versus Team, I don't know, WWE or Hurt Business, or how is it going to go? Like, the Hurt Business, I love it, because it's not like we're good guys, we are bad guys. It's like, we are the fucking Hurt Business, and we'll do what suits us, you know what I mean? Yeah. They're just so good. I love it.
It was brilliant.
Oh, man. But what's your answer to this question? Last time you got invested.
I actually thought of you when I saw that happen. I'm like, Keane is going to love this. I'm so glad you brought it up.
Oh, I did. Yeah,
and then it actually landed. For me, I know, Jesus, after the opening of the show, it'll be ironic when I give an answer that's OTT here. But I'm going to go Jordan Devlin against Wilder. That was fantastic. Do you remember the discussions we had around all of that? And like how every week we'd have full-on like chats as if wrestling was real. We just discussed the storyline. David Starr against Jordan Devlin as well was very similar to that. I know obviously it has been tainted with revelations and whatnot, but it is the answer to the question, like in terms of the last time kind of it was. Or again, you've got Naito, his whole like journey in New Japan. The only problem was I wasn't kind of, it didn't hit. And that's the problem. Like, it was great. The match was great, so we forgive the rest. But the storyline didn't land in the way I think it was intended. So I would have loved it to be that, like that effective, as like I can imagine it in my head, where I'm all in every step of the way. But it didn't land, so I'm gonna have to say it was the Devin Walter Starr feud that kind of made me forget it, because we had full on discussions that were about the storyline, but they were like opinions, and we talked about it like we were 12-year-olds in the schoolyard. So, that's my answer.
Thank you for the question, Adam. Jay at Wolf of the Borough asks, if you could change one detail to make a famous/infamous moment in wrestling more iconic, what would it be? Either something minor or prominent, like Punk coming out to cult of personality. Nah, I'm going to disagree with you on that one, man. I love the kill switch engage. And I actually prefer his old team. I thought that fit really well. But that's just a personal opinion. At Money in the Bank 2011. Or Mr. Kennedy actually being the illegitimate son in 2008. Again, I disagree. I think the Sandman would have been a better option. But that's just me. Very valid observations, actually. And a very good question. So, Rick, how do you change? Or do you have an answer off the top of your head?
Yeah, I had to think about this. Hogan Rock at WrestleMania 18, except it's the main event. Will be one for me, because like it's just, again, WrestleMania 18 is it's barely watchable, and it's strange because, like, again, but a lot of people love it, and I think it was like we were saying about title belts. I think it was people's first WrestleMania, so they have that attachment towards it. Same way WrestleMania 16 was my first, like, I consider it my first, even though I'd kind of watched half-hearted. I just didn't know what WrestleMania was when I watched before that. But that's terrible now, and I have to look back and admit that. But the fact that it wasn't just makes it very disjointed as a card, and just makes it all feel off, because even the great thing that happened on that card happened in the wrong spot. And then, like, after you finish that match, you have to go watch a random four-way tag match or whatever was next on the lineup, and then you have to watch a really shit main event where the crowd are just like, we're done. Like the end of the night for us was Hogan Rock, and it hurt everything else, and it hurt, like, what was up till then a very good Triple H and Chris Jericho feud, but it was just a dead main event. And it was the first main event of WrestleMania that I can actually remember being that dead, and it introduced us to the idea that there could be bad WrestleMania main events, at least, like, for people in that era. Also, another one as well, I've spoken about this on Low Blows before, when The Undertaker came back as the American Badass, I changed it so it just wasn't really confusing, because there was that whole, like, adrenaline rush of, Undertaker's back, he's got a new look, he's got a new gimmick, oh my God, this is amazing. And then it's like, but The Rock lost by disqualification. It's like, wait, so The Rock isn't the champion? So what am I supposed to do with all this euphoria I'm feeling at the amazing comeback? Because it just happened so fast, and there's too many things for me to process. Like, I talked about this. I remember I just walked into the kitchen and just broke down crying in front of my mom. Like, and it wasn't even that it was that sad. I was just, like, there were so too many emotions happening at the same time. And I was a huge Rock fan, so I'm like, I guess I'm really sad about him losing the championship, but I don't know how to feel. So I just broke. So if they just, like, scripted that properly, where you could just feel the feelings one feeling at a time and enjoy them, rather than just trying to overload 50 different things on you and breaking your brain, I'd enjoy that, because it was a really special moment, and it was a big moment. Undertaker changing from the dead man, that should have stood out a bit more.
There's a lot. There's so many. Like, I should have given this question a bit more time, because I didn't realize you're including sort of big changes. Well, I just read minor, and for minor changes, I'd go with two camera angles at two Royal Rumbles. The first one being AJ Styles' debut. Could have done with a shot of the Titantron, or a shot of AJ, or a shot of something else that wasn't Roman Reigns' face. But at the same time, there was something kind of gas about it. Like, I remember watching that for the first time and seeing, like, hearing the music and hearing the crowd reaction, but not seeing what was happening. And it was kind of, like, in a way, that was kind of cool too. But I just feel it's a bit weird. Like, look, like, it really should have been a shot of AJ Styles, or a shot of the Titantron, or something like that. And then the last Royal Rumble, just there, we missed Edge's first spear. Yeah. So, that kind of, again, like, these things are edited, and there's alternate angles and stuff that you can go back and watch now. But, like, at the time, it would have been nice if we didn't fucking miss Edge's spear. Because there was that moment in the middle of all the emotion, all the tears and all the happiness, where everyone just went, what the fuck? And then went back and be like, oh my God.
Because you just, again, it's when you get these moments, it's just pure euphoria going through your soul. And they have this, like, there's just this, and euphoria is like tension, but for tension to exist, you need release, and the spear is the catharsis, where we're like, yeah! But instead, what we got was energy, just confused energy. It's very so true.
Like, come on, yeah! Wait, what? Yeah! So that's what I'd change.
Brilliant!
Thank you for the question, Jay. At Roscom Dan, what's your favourite time travel theory? The first is that Back to the Future?
Back to the Future.
Look at me with my movie knowledge. That is proper. That is some expertise being shared. BTTF stands for Back to the Future, in case you didn't know, but I did because I'm the expert. So their theory is going back changes the future. Endgame, going back creates a parallel timeline. Terminator, the past, present, future, already written, nothing can change it. Or do you have another theory when it comes to time travel?
So like, for me, time travel is just like kind of a plot device for like TV or movies, which I don't mind. I actually quite like it. It can be a fun one, and what I like about it is I like different theories. And how I like to see how different things use it, which is why I was pleasantly surprised when Endgame had like a time travel element to it. And they actually discussed all of these different types of time travel as to how it would work. For me, of those, like, I don't have a particular favorite. I obviously don't believe it can happen because, like, it's not like real. It's a plot device. I don't like parallel timelines because it's just, there's no way we can wrap our head around that, and it makes everything seem equivocated. With, well, if it can happen, like, if things can be bad here, then things can be good elsewhere. Like, so I don't like that because, like, it lessens the stakes, if anything. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, there can be a happy ending in a different timeline and so on. Whereas I feel it should just be one timeline where you care about the stakes of the character involved. So I like Back to the Future, but it only really works in a Back to the Future context. And if anyone else did it, it'd be different. The Terminator thing I like because I like that as a rule, but in any great story, you need a source of tension. So when I like when the rule is Terminator, where it's like, this is the way that it happened and nothing else can change it. And you can only make that. And then when characters have to struggle with that. So there was a series, what was his name? There was a series that I only watched. Sorry, I only watched it last year. Bear with me 2 seconds. It was very good. It really tackled this. I'm just checking it now. I'm sorry. You have to listen to me fucking. You have to listen to me look up Wikipedia. Give me 2 seconds. So how are you guys? It was called Devs. Sorry, Devs. Devs, like, wrestled with the, like, it was the whole concept of that was predetermination or do we have free will? I love stories like that. And that's what it wrestled with, where it's like, the main character thought that the world is predetermined and anything we're doing is just solidifying an event that was always destined to happen 100 times out of 100. That's the way I like it, where there's a tension between the two and people are aware of that tension and then trying to fight it. But also I like when, you know, they hold firm with that, and that's what Devs does. Like, it doesn't just like go, no, the characters get to choose for themselves. Like, when they get to the resolution and whatever it is, it feels earned, and it feels like, okay, I actually understand why people are doing this and why what's happening needs to happen and so on. So that's kind of the way I like my time travel.
Every little thing you do adds up to where you're at now. So I think the only right answer is the going back changes the future route.
Okay.
I think that's basic science. You know, when you time travel, that's what happens. So yeah,
basic science.
Yeah.
Corporate key notice science fan here.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the question, Dan.
We got some good suggestions here before we move on. The way they do it in Misfits, at least for the first three episodes, Star Trek used to do quite good ones involving a butterfly effect of sort. Butterfly effect is also a very effective, very good time travel method, which, like, you believe would have, like, I think that'd be kind of your preference, I think, Keen, because that ties in more with what you're saying, where everything you do in the past, like directly impacts the future, but also in unforeseen ways. Original series had a timeline where the Nazis won because a girl that Kirk fancied didn't die. Dan leads toward the predetermined model. Jonathan says the game Life is Strange did that decently as well, where you basically get to travel back in time a minute to change a decision you made, and then you can agonize over that as much as you want. So there's loads of different stories. I think we all love a good time travel, like, mindfuck at the very least.
At Simpson WWE, who was the bigger piece of shit, Grandpa Joe or Jenny?
Do you know the stakes or the context of this?
What do you mean?
Do you know, like, who these people are?
I don't know who Jenny is.
Okay, so Grandpa Joe, just to kind of give you a perspective, Grandpa Joe, Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, lived in bed, was raised by his family, infirm, but then like an opportunity to go to, they got the golden ticket all of a sudden, and then he was grand and he was able to get up and start dancing around. So people see him as kind of a leecher. Jenny was the girl, was the love interest in Forrest Gump, who was just never, Forrest Gump is kind of like, there's like kind of, he's a bit special needs. I don't know how much you know about Forrest Gump, but he goes back and he experiences like various different points of history. And he's just there for them, and it's just a part of his life. And Jenny is the person that he's always chasing. She's kind of his raison d'etre, except she's always keeping him on the long finger, and it's seen as if she's leading him on of sorts. So that's kind of the context between the two. Of those two, who would you say seems like the bigger piece of shit? Or the wider of them, or one of them, or whatever you think out of those two?
I don't know. We'll say Grandpa Joe.
Okay. You just don't like leechers, is it?
Just old people just piss me off.
I didn't expect that reason. Just the idea of grandparents in general, like fuck them. You lost me at grandpa. I wasn't expecting that. Okay. Random ageism.
No offense, Katie, if you're listening, sorry.
It was all for a dig of Katie. Brilliant. Right. Jenny was a victim of abuse. Joe was a huge liar. Okay. I'm going to say, yeah, Joe was a huge liar and he took advantage of his family and all. But like, again, there's, who is he a threat to? Like, he's not a threat to kind of anyone else but himself. I don't accept people's abuse. And like, even like fucking speaking out, like we can look at that and stuff like that and how people say like, oh, look, I have mental health problems or I had these issues. I don't accept that people's issues from their past allows them to, mistreat other people, which is ultimately what Jenny did. Like, she led Forrest on, she hurt him several times, and then eventually, spoiler alerts, like, but you probably would have guessed it anyway, even if you've never seen it, she ended up acquiescing and getting with him in the end. I don't accept that. Like, Jenny is a classic avoidant, and avoidant are bad people who will mistreat people because of, yes, they have issues and so on, and they don't believe in like pairing off with people and this and that and the other. And that's fine if that's what you want to do, but they also have an addiction to keeping people just close enough and toying with them and leading them on so they can get them interested and to take advantage of someone like Forrest Gump, who was a bit simpler than most people. It's just cruel. And it's strange and it's weird as well. Whereas like Grandpa Joe, there's a lot of Grandpa Joes in this world. They're leechers, they're freeloaders, they're the type who I don't necessarily see it as not a big deal. It is a big deal, and it is a shitty thing for him to do, to just like freeload off his family and allow himself to get cared for and pretend to be infirm until something big happens to someone in the family, at which stage he jumps at the opportunity and then admits to the rest of the family that he was actually fine the whole time. That's a shitty thing to do, I agree. But Jenny actually like led someone on and hurt someone and then used the whole "but my mental health" excuse for it all. No, sorry, Jenny's the bigger piece of shit the two. Though I also think as well, like, this is two triggering issues for people, and it's going to trigger people differently depending on your own kind of experiences and your own kind of feelings towards various issues. So it's very interesting. I love this debate. It's a common online debate, and I love it for that reason, because it always, like, it's two completely separate issues, and whichever way you feel is going to reveal more about you than giving an actual answer, because there is no answer. They're incomparable situations, which I guess makes it fun. We also have a few. Grandpa Joe's a fuckwit. Look up some of his YouTube videos on how bad he is. Jenny was just a hippie. Grandpa Joe, much worse. Jenny was a victim of abuse. Joe was a huge liar. She's still a horrible person. Kanye wrote Gold Digger about Grandpa Joe. Typical chat room votes one way. Rick votes buttons. I didn't vote for buttons. I voted the same way you guys voted.
You let me and Katie vote Buttons because you didn't want to. You didn't want to take this shit, but you knew that Buttons were the real winners. You know what I mean?
I want a Milky Way or a Milky Bear.
Where are we? Yes. Thank you for the question at Owen_Davis1. Watching Big Year in Big School made me realize that my incredibly strong hatred for children would more than likely stop me from being a teacher. What regular jobs could you just never do?
Tough.
I don't think I could be like a bus driver. I think I'd struggle with that.
Okay. Why? Just not being able to drive?
Yeah,
yeah, can't drive. Fair. I walk past someone every day, and it's just like kind of the, do you know the Dublin City Council? And again, this isn't a snobby thing, or saying there's anything wrong with them. Like, I think they're kind of heroes in a weird way, because they do the jobs that needs to be done, but none of us want to do. But again, like, I was walking past one on my way to work there the other day, and they're just like walking along, cleaning the streets in like, just like they're heavy, like high vis jacket, but they're getting rained on. Like, they probably had a hood on their jacket, but they weren't wearing it up, and they just look fucking miserable. And I'm like, I'd hate to be stuck working like 8 hours a day, working outdoors, even in shitty conditions, or bin man or something like that, where you're just always gonna. You're always going to get home and be smelly. You know what I mean? You're working in a smelly environment. I smelled a bit in work today because I wore a hoodie that I probably should have, like, was probably like one wear longer than I should have put it for the wash. And I had a miserable day as a result. So I'd hate to work around rubbish or anything like that, where I'm just smelling myself all day. And I'm like, ugh, I smell like bins. Again, that's not snobby. I don't judge these people. They're probably heroes in their own right. But it's just, I wouldn't like that personally.
Thank you for the question, Owen.
Nine-to-five office job. I used to think that. I used to think that as well. Rat race and all that stuff. Do it now, love it. And it's different strokes, and I totally get why people feel that way. But again, like, I couldn't go back to doing, say, shift work and the likes. Just because I've done it, and like, kind of again, I value like even just stuff like having weekends and having a routine and having a schedule and having kind of. It's also helped me with my work-life balance as well. Like, there's a certain time that's allotted for work, there's a certain place that's allotted for work, and that's where work happens. And then also, like, it was also I always had a big struggle in my life, balancing work and life, and one would bleed into the other and so on, and it's not healthy and it's not good. Whereas now, like, there's a time and a place for work, and then when I leave that, I let it go. But when I'm in there, I take it fucking seriously, and I work my ass off. And just having that freedom to be able to enjoy football and stuff guilt-free, it's amazing. It's only a small thing, but it's something that was a big game changer for me. So I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree with it, but I kind of have the opposite experience. But again, it's different strokes.
Yes. Thank you, Owen. At Joe Stodge, what are your most ridiculous memories of the Celtic Tiger? Mine was being offered a 110% mortgage on a 300k apartment based on overtime and future earnings. I was a second year apprentice at the time, getting €305 a week.
That is a very Celtic Tiger story. Jesus Christ. Hope you're doing okay now, Joe. Jesus. There's a lot of people led up the garden path then. Do you even remember the Celtic Tiger?
Like, you I was like, going to say, my memories when I was seven, things were pretty wild. Used to get two packets of meanies instead of the one, you know what I mean? Things were pretty wild. The recession hit when I was, 2008?
Yeah.
So I was like nine, I don't know. I was young anyway.
What's that like?
Yeah.
I have to imagine. So for me, for example, like, again, I hear, now I know we always talk about how you're much younger, and I suppose it must be tough for you to contextualize, but I suppose then again, you also come and hang out every Wednesday with two boomers like me and Katie every week. So I guess there's you have points of reference in your life. But what was that like? Because again, like, for me, I was only talking about this the other week. I think I briefly mentioned on the show the week I was talking about it was, like, how when me and Katie would have grown up, we had the belief that if you work hard, you could be rich, like kind of the American dream belief. But I think people kind of who grew up like yourself, when like you were formulated during the recession, essentially, like, did you grow up like thinking there's no hope for me, there's no point in having any ambition, that's stupid? Or how would you contextualize that? Or can you even? Sorry, I know I'm asking big questions here.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Like, how do you feel about the recession? Like, what was your kind of formulative kind of view of Ireland or the world growing up in the recession? Like, were you conscious of it? Like,
yeah, I was aware that it existed. I mean, anytime the news was on, you know, it's all that be getting talked about. You know, if you knew any adults, you know what I mean? Like, that's all they're talking about and stuff. I don't know, like, it kind of depends on what your goals were and what you want to achieve out of life, you know what I mean? I wasn't really, I was a kid, I'm not thinking about any of these things on a deep level at that age. I just wanted to go and watch wrestling or some shit.
Yeah, I suppose you're only getting to the age right now where you'd start to actually have goals. And you, like, like, you're an intelligent person, and, like, you keep, like, every week you know, you have like kind of adult conversations with us. So I guess we forget that. I guess now that you're only at that age where like goals are like starting to formulate. So that's fair. Sorry, I know I'm putting you on the spot there. I just do find that interesting, like the differences, because I think like there are major differences in how we grew up. And I always wonder if like stuff like anxiety and teenage mental health and stuff like that was like a result of growing up in the recession and stuff. That's just stuff that interests me. But I'm also an elfless, so that boring shit would. For me, the memories I have is of like people being really arrogant and above themselves. Like, for example, kids like in school just being like, because I'd be doing like my junior cert or leaving cert at the time, and they're like, you want a trade, man, you want to get a trade, you want to be a plumber, or you want to be a builder or stuff like that. And then 3 years later, it's like, well, guys, I'm moving to Australia. And it's just like the same people. And I don't mean, I'm not laughing at their misfortune or stuff like that, but it was just very like, people were so sure of what the right answer was.
No, I laughed when he said trade, because I thought he said, you know, that was like trading like stocks and all that shit.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you meant when you said trade. I was like, mad.
But we
that's
were.
What all people are doing now and all. They're big in their like trading fucking
cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, all that sort of shit. Like, that's just gambling for dickheads. You know what I mean? Just betting the football or something instead. If you remember like that.
Gambling for dickheads. There's the episode title. but people were so sure, like, of themselves, like, at the time, because they were very, like, this is what you have to do, and this is the way it is. And you should get a mortgage right now, because, like, mortgages, they're just giving them away, so you'd be crazy not to. So Joe was probably influenced by that, where he's like, oh, I suppose I should just buy a house, because everyone was telling you that was what you had to do. And like, when you look at even like these days, this is why I have no problem, like, if I ever have to go against the grain or anything like that, this is why I have no problem doing so, because like, people are wrong, and like, the entire country gets it wrong. Like, this happens a lot because Ireland did it. I've grown up where people are like, you need to get a trade, you need to be a plumber, or you need to be a builder. And then 3 years later, it's like, the worst thing you could have done was become a builder at that time. Or you need to get a mortgage. The worst thing you could have done was get a mortgage at that time. You need to get a second home. You need to get a holiday home. You need to get a second or third car. And then people are like, the worst thing you could have done was get that. And that's what we got to see play out. And it wasn't that it was even like you could laugh at these people's misfortune, because it was so fucking serious, and like, people have been so misled and led up the garden path that all you could do was, even if they were dickheads to you, you'd still feel bad for them, because they just believed what they were being told, and they were just at the whims of a faulty system that like favored a very small amount of people. It was horrific in hindsight, but they'd be my memories of the Celtic Tiger.
Thank you for the question, Joe. And now Declan at Rovers are back. And
here
hopefully,
you go.
Hopefully this time next week, hopefully he'll be asking us about how we felt after Rovers beat AC Milan. But we'll wait and see.
Buzzing
for
it.
Wait and see. Tomorrow night on RT2.
Yes.
I think it's 7.
Yeah.
He asked, this is a fucking great question. Yeah. There is a football tournament set up for people who have podcasts. Very specific football tournament, but I'm not going to argue.
it's us. Who else? Who's a podcast these days? Like,
just every single person, actually. So,
that's it. There's so many that there's people. Can't even remember.
It's a weird requirement, like.
Yeah.
Set up for people with podcasts, and they can pick people.
Jonathan, we know you have a podcast, all right? We know you do a Pokemon podcast on the Low Blows Network every Tuesday, Jelly Filled Donut, all right? Several, actually. Okay. All right. Jonathan, all right. There, that's your plug. The plug has happened, all right? Go on, sorry.
They can pick people who listen to be in the team. Who's in the starting 11 for the Low Blows team? Winning team gets €1 million for out. I mean, all right, we'll take it. So here, I've done a lot of career mode. You know,
this is you all over.
You have to really you have to work. It's like when you've got like a League Two team or something. You have to just work with what you've got and hope for the best.
No offense, listeners. you're League Two team.
That's a compliment. I'm basically saying that we could literally ascend to the fourth tier of English football and destroy everyone at will if we had to. But this is the team I'd lay out, right? So we've got 11 players, right? 11 players on this pitch. I have had to rotate those people who just missed out on the team, people, you know, who nearly made it, and like this is tough. But our formation to start off with, right? 4-1-2-1-2 wide. So we've got, you know, back four, a CDM, two wingers, a CAM, and two strikers. We're going to be playing liquid football. We're playing that Stephen Kenny style. Beautiful football, right?
Liquid football, I feel like I should mention, is the name of a podcast that Jonathan presents. I don't know if you meant it that way or not, but it actually is. He does have a lot of podcasts. Oh, I
definitely meant that, yes. Look at that seamless transition. We start with the keeper, right? And the keeper is a very, very important position. Like, you can waffle your way through a lot of positions, you know, maybe the wider ones or, you know, striker or something like that. But the keeper, I mean, if you make a mistake as a keeper, you're fucked. You don't get bailed out. You are the person who bails out others, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I looked at this and I was like, right, we need somebody with experience. And I don't know who has experience as a keeper. But when I just figured, who would be the one person who would randomly just say something like, you know, when I was a keeper in the League of Ireland in the late 90s, there was this lad who used to do all this weird shit backstage and like fucking. And we used to call him by this weird nickname. And who'd have a story where they'd like casually mention that they were like a keeper in the 90s or something, or some, you know what I mean? Like, who would randomly have that about them? And I've gone with Joe Stodge. Is he probably has no experience as a keeper, but I don't think anyone does. But if I was to put money on somebody being a keeper at some point, maybe it's Joe. Maybe if I had to just gamble,
if I had to put money on, like, you could substitute the word keeper for anything in that sentence, like, keep Joe in there. If I had to put money on Joe being blah, I'd put money on it, whatever it is. Like, I believe Joe's
a wild card, you know what I mean?
Joe's done everything.
Yeah, so yeah, hey, that's what I mean. He's done fucking everything.
Keeper's so nothing to Joe.
Yeah, I think he'd be up for the challenge, you know what I mean? So we're putting a lot of trust in Joe, but I think it'll pay off in the end. Right back, Sean McGovern. So basically, Sean's been doing this career mode for the last four seasons, I think. Around four seasons. And his right back in those four seasons for Olympiacos was none other than Cyrus Christie. So he got to experience firsthand what the ideal right back is supposed to be and what they have to do, you know, with the ball at their feet, with no ball at their feet. Cyrus Christie does it all, and he's been watching Cyrus Christie for the last 4 years for Olympiacos. So I'm going to go with Sean. I think he's learned from the best, and he will slot in at right back, which I think is a fair position.
Yeah, no, fair.
So the next two, first of all, they're both centre-backs, right? The first one, you need someone fearless. You know what I mean? Someone who doesn't give a fuck. He's just going to slide in, two-footing cunts around the place, whatever. And I actually think Jay, at Wolf of the Borough, right?
Yeah.
To be an Irish man and turn around and say that he supports Rangers.
Yeah.
Something I obviously don't agree with, but you've got balls on you to be going around saying things like that. So I'm going to put him in as centre-back. And Scottish football, which I'd imagine he watches a lot of, is, you know, it's centre-backs just fucking hooping and doing fucking Scottish football shit, which is the sort of thing I want to see. I think he'd be a good centre-back, so I'm going to put Jay in there. The second one, right? The second one is somebody who can psych out the opposition, you know what I mean? So imagine, right, the opponent Jay's fucked. He's got Jay got sent off, right? And the fullbacks are too far wide, and they got caught up, and we're on the counter, right? And we've got one centre back left. The player is clean through. What do we want that centre back to do? We want that centre back to get into his opponent's ear and just say, €1 million, but you have to miss this shot right now. €1 million, or you have to do this. €1 million, you have to do that. It completely psychs out the opposition in the opportunity. You know what I mean? Or like they're about to take a set piece, and he just walks up and he's like, €1 million, but you have to sky this way over. My centre back of choice is Chris. It is at Spolino 90. I think he slots into this position very, brilliant. Very well.
He just makes it overthink. Brilliant.
So left back again, I don't know if we've any footballers who listen, so football fans is the next best thing, and I have full faith in Keith Handley. I just think Keith, he watches Liverpool. To be fair, Liverpool are a good team. Keith, just copy what Robertson does, all right? You know what I mean? I'm sure you've got the pace, you've got the passing, you've got the, you can read the game as well as he can. I'm sure you can, you know, you got the tackling, the slide tackling all nailed down. I have faith in you, Keith. You know what I mean? As the manager here, I think you're the person I'm gonna put a left back, and I expect good results. Clean sheets, counterattacks, you name it. Keith, please don't let me down.
I imagine like Keith or other people like listening, like in the Zoom with like Loblaws on in the background, but not really listening, and then they hear themselves mentioned and it's like, what am I?
But Keith actually heard it. He goes, solid choice. Thank you, Keith. I fully believe it is too. CDM is where there's no messing about, right? So say, right. But not only is there no messing about, CDM is, here's what I want out of CDM, right? Our winger's gone on a run, right? And they fucked it. They've completely fucked it. They get tackled and they jump face first into the ground. You know what I mean? They're just like, right, no, I'm taking a dive here. I'm playing this football 03 and I've pressed L2. I've just dived. Clear as fucking day. Everyone has seen that it's a dive. In fact, the winger may even get booked because the dive was that bad. It was that blatant. We want a CDM who's willing to stand up and say, ref! What the fuck? Send him, like, send off the player that just nearly broke our winger's legs. You know what I mean? What the fuck? And I've heard Linda shout before at wrestling shows. I have heard her shout for what she believes in. And I think it's enough to intimidate the ref and influence the ref's decision making. So we are going to go Linda at CDM.
I can imagine Linda walking down the ref like in a Roy Keane fashion.
You know what I mean? Square
like
up.
Just walking him down like, and the ref just cowering.
Exactly. So, wingers, right? Wingers, we need pace first. I mean, pace is important. Pace is like the bread and butter of a winger. If you're not pacey, you're not really going to succeed in that position.
100%.
And who's got 99 pace? Probably somebody who's done a lot of running, you know what I mean? Somebody who's got the stamina, who's got the agility, the speed, acceleration, all that sort of stuff. And I think after the months and months of running away from Phil Boyd, I think Dan Manning is a solid shout for right mid. I am going to put Dan in right mid. Again, full. I'm actually, the more I build this team, the more confident I am in this in our results. I've also gone with a left winger again, more pace. I didn't really know, this is kind of left wing was actually the last position I went with because I didn't really know who to go with. So I just kind of went with Rian just because I feel like there's a lot of old people that listen to the show as well as young people. I think you kind of have to go with youth if nothing else.
The left wing is a solid pace, you know what I mean? Place to build youth. He's the Ryan Giggs of the
So I'm just going with Rian just because I think, you know, if somebody's going to be fast, it'd probably be a younger person. Calm, someone creative, and Kento is very creative with his questions, and he, you know what I mean, he does, he thinks outside the box quite a lot with his questions. He's got something new every single week, so I think creativity is important, and we're going to put Kento at Calm for that reason alone. Two strikers, chemistry is important, chemistry is everything, you know what I mean? Think of it like it's ultimate team. You need two players with that green line going from one to the other, 10 chemistry each. Two players that gel and two players that are different but the same in a way. The first one is the sort of smaller, pacier of the two, and that is, of course, Terry Thatcher. And the other one is our Peter Crouch, our Andy Carroll. You know what I mean? When Rian gets the ball, or when Dan Manning gets the ball, they whip that into the box. We need somebody who's 7'11" that can just header that in, no problem at all. And somebody who has great chemistry with Terry Thatcher. We are, of course, going with Declan Byrne. You yourself are going to be our striker, our number 10. And I have full faith in you. So, that is our starting 11. We do have super subs. Dave Cullen, he just missed out as well. He was going to be the CDM before I thought of Linda, because obviously Dave Cullen has a really good like vocal range. I feel like he'd be able to, like, I've heard him sing. You know, he's in that heavy band. He's in Element X. So he'd be a good one for the shouting at the ref, I feel.
Yeah.
Adam as well missed out just about. Jimmy Malloy just missed out. Jonathan Nolan didn't just miss out. That was a conscious decision. I feel like we need chemistry, we need harmony. We would argue in the dressing room at halftime about Driver 3 when there are much bigger things to be arguing about.
You've made your bed, Jonathan.
The whole team would fall apart. Jimmy Malloy says it's a good team. I think it's a good team as well. I think this team would absolutely... I think League of Ireland...
Jonathan left the chat.
I think it would work. Thank you very much for the question, Declan. And again, hopefully this time next week, we'll be bussing over the results. But we'll wait and see. It'll be some game.
Love it.
The final question, the main event. I won't say the creme de la creme, because they're all good questions. You know what I mean? But this is the question that just so happens to be last for the week that's in it. What's key in? The NFL experts take on week one of the NFL, and how does he see week two playing out? That's from Chris Morty at Stagwar 13. Well, what can I say about week one other than wow? Wow. Wow. Oh, man.
Keen Sports Talk.
yeah. So, I mean, there was a lot of touchdowns, lots of great plays, lots of standout performances. Which I'm sure Rich Rick would agree with.
I don't really know that much about
NFL. As someone who knows loads about the NFL, I can assure you week one was excellent. Superb. And week two, honestly, it's
what was your favorite part?
The Ravens, definitely.
Which bit?
And the Vikings.
That was really good. There was loads. There's so many are coming to mind right now for the Ravens. What was your favorite moment in particular? Like, from what player?
Oh, you see, when you talk about players and you talk about the Ravens, you have to look at, it's not just the players that did well, but the players that sort of did the under the radar work. You know what I mean? It's about overall performance, top to bottom. It's not just about, you know, each individual player, but as a team, how they managed to succeed. And, you know, at the end of the day, what I really have to say, Lamar Jackson, his part was fucking unreal. What he did at quarterback was just, you know, really, he's the focus. He is the
right
focal point of this team. You know what I mean? You can look at everyone else. Doesn't matter what the other players doing. Fuck the other players. Doesn't matter, right? Lamar Jackson and his performance was the standout of the entire week, in my opinion.
Okay.
And in week two, we're going to see him doing even better. Even better. Love Lamar Jackson.
Right.
Andrew's catch right up there. Yes. Was what I was going to say, but Jimmy got there before me. Come on, Jimmy. Bye.